Okay, our first case is Calvin Brackville against Stephen Ruff and others. Mr. Kreckenberg.
Good morning, Your Honor. Caleb Kreckenberg for Mr. Brackville, and I'd like to reserve 3 minutes if I could. Your Honor, the district court erred in granting summary judgment on a record that was not only equivocal, but viewing the facts most favorable to Mr. Brackville, established that there was not probable cause to arrest him for the only offense that the district court relied on, which was stopping his car in the middle of the street. According to Officer Hill, the officer who stopped Mr. Brackville, he ordered Mr. Brackville to stop because he saw a problem with his front bumper. And at his direction, Mr. Brackville stopped. Based on those facts, there is a material factual dispute that should go to a jury.
And so we don't have to, in reviewing this matter, we could affirm on any basis that's supported by the record, could we not?
That is
correct. So we could look also at the bumper violation. And why wasn't driving with a bumper or bumper cover that was dragging and hitting the Chestnut Street a violation of the regulations promulgated under the Motor Vehicle Code?
Well, Your Honor, the Commonwealth, or the Court of Common Pleas, decided against that. And the Court of Common Pleas thought that under Pennsylvania...
They could decide against it, but we can look at the record, correct?
Well, there are two sort of issues there. And one is about the scope of the appeal, because the defendants did not file a cross notice of appeal. And while it's true that obviously this court can reach any issue, in this context, the district court did not rule on that question.
It was before them.
It was before the district court, and he didn't rule.
It was before the district court.
Yes.
And so too would it not be before us? I mean, there'd be no reason for the officers to raise that on appeal. They were trying to defend the affirmance by the district court.
Well, and that is why, Your Honor, in this circumstance, that it's not necessarily appropriate, or appropriate's not the right word. It's not normal or usual for this court to reach out and decide that issue, because it's not presented directly by the appeal.
But permissible.
It is permissible.
Okay.
Certainly.
All right. So I guess I would only ask you, in trying to argue that there wasn't probable cause for the arrest for the stopping in the middle, I would ask you to address whether or not there was probable cause for the arrest based on the bumper violation.
Well, and I think we have the same issue with respect to a dispute of material facts.
Okay.
Because then we have the disputed testimony about what exactly happened. There is some testimony in the record that the bumper cover was loose or was hanging. There's also testimony that it was completely off. That's what the officer testified in front of the magisterial district court, or the initial violation, and then we found out later that that was not true, because Officer Ruff, who testified to that, actually said, "I didn't see it driving."
But regardless of whether it was the bumper or the bumper cover, and whether it was only partially or completely off, your client, it's undisputed, and your client testified that it was off in part. It was dragging on the ground. He heard it make noise, and that's what caused him to stop. So where is the dispute that there was some portion of the bumper or bumper cover that was dragging?
Well, because Officer Hill, I believe, testified that then they put it back on, and there's a question of how much it was secured after they had done the initial repair, where Mr. Brackville had stopped in the street. The record,
but at some moment before the repair, there was a deficiency with the bumper or bumper cover, right? And that it seems could have satisfied the probable cause standard for the bumper cover violation. But I guess you also mentioned earlier that the Common Pleas Court dismissed the conviction on that, but that was not under a probable cause inquiry. That was a much heightened standard. So where is the relevance to the probable cause?
Well, Your Honor, because the Common Pleas Court essentially said, based on this record, this is not, as a matter of law, could not be a violation of the statute. And so if we're looking at probable cause, we do have to look at whether or not the facts presented to the court could establish as a matter of law a violation of that statute.
So we have to look at whether something can be proven beyond a reasonable doubt in order to decide whether there was probable cause for an arrest?
No, we have to have facts which, if true, could establish a violation. And so there's a difference, I think, and I think this is where the dispute about whether it was bumper cover, whether the actual bumper, because the statute says the bumper, it is a bumper violation. And there's testimony in the record that this was the bumper cover. This was like some additional piece that was on the front of the car that was dragging momentarily, then it was reaffixed. And so there is a dispute about what exactly happened there and whether there was probable cause.
Doesn't the regulation say that no portion of a bumper may be broken, torn, or protruding to create a hazard?
Yes.
Would this, even if it were the cover, then would it satisfy that?
Well, that's certainly not what the Court of Common Pleas determined as a matter of law, looking at Pennsylvania law. And I think that is an important distinction here, because this court obviously looks at Pennsylvania law as interpreted by Pennsylvania courts. And I think there is also a distinction. There's a factual dispute about whether there's a hazard here. Because again, the record is something was dragging, or there was a noise that was dragging. And then Officer Hill said he stopped Mr. Brackbill in the middle of the street. They reattached the bumper or fixed it. There's a dispute. The record is unclear about that.
Yeah, you know, you talk about what Freeman, I'm not sure what the relevance of what the Common Pleas Court did, but you talk about, I mean, the court said at best it's de minimis infraction. Right. And it said, in the interest of justice, they're going to dismiss it. It doesn't sound to me like it made any findings at all that are relevant in this case.
Well,
it dismissed it. It said it's not to get
yes.
You know, get out of here. That happens a lot.
Certainly. And I think when we're looking back and we're trying to justify something that obviously this was not why Mr. Brackbill was stopped. Nobody's even ever sort of made that argument. They stopped him because they suspected DUI. And so now we're trying to come up with a reason that could possibly justify the stop, looking in hindsight. And that's a problem here, because there's not a clear probable cause, there's not a clear series of events that could justify any of these alleged infractions.
I think the issue, though, is we're not trying to figure out why he was stopped, or we don't actually even, I mean, your client says he wasn't even stopped. He pulled over of his own accord. We're trying to look at the basis for the arrest, and we're required to look at whether there was any appropriate basis, whether there was probable cause for any violation. And so we have to look at this regardless of what the charge was at the time of the offense. Or are you implying otherwise?
No, of course not, Your Honor. But what I'm saying is that when we're looking at summary judgment and we're looking at equivocal facts and disputed facts that the defense is trying to sort of make out a probable cause for some violation, some reason to arrest, there is a dispute. And I mean, the basis that the district court ruled on was this stopping in the street, which, again, there's a material dispute. The officer who stopped Mr. Brackbill says, I told him to stop, I ordered him out of the car.
Okay, so if we're back to stopping in the street, why have you not affirmatively forfeited that argument? Because your statement of material facts relied on your client's testimony that he stopped of his own accord.
Well, when we're evaluating summary judgment, we look at all the facts in the record, any available source.
Yes, as a general principle, but if you have told the district court, this is what you should look at, this is what I think the facts are, and you did that repeatedly in the briefing and the statement of material facts, then why shouldn't we allow you to focus the facts on what you've put in your statement of material facts?
Well, and if we look at the sort of sequence of events, I mean, the statement of material facts came first, and then the defense argued there are different types of traffic violations, and the defense brief actually said Mr. Brackbill has not offered a reason to say that he couldn't pull over to the side safely. The magistrate court did not rule on that alleged violation. It didn't address it. And then when the district court overruled the report and recommendation, that's the first time we see the argument that Mr. Brackbill, because he said he stopped on his own volition, therefore violated the statute. And I think in that sequence of events, there's no place for Mr. Brackbill to come back and say, actually, Your Honor, what about Officer Hill? What about Pennsylvania case law that says you are allowed to stop in certain circumstances temporarily? And I think in that sequence of events, we have an issue.
But Officer Hill's testimony was already in the record. Well, it was already had been taken when you filed your statement of undisputed material facts, right? And so you had the opportunity to look at that and say, well, look, there is a fact dispute here. Instead, you said, don't look at anything else. The implication here was look only at what my client said. He said that he stopped on his own. And that, I mean, do you agree that if that were taken to be true, then that could support a violation of the statute about stopping in the street?
I don't agree, Your Honor, because then we still have the Pennsylvania case law interpreting this violation, or at least the predecessor statute, saying that a temporary stop to address the roadworthiness of your vehicle is not a violation. So we still have that issue, even if Mr. Brackbill remembered it correctly, that he stopped on his own volition. But I think Officer Hill's testimony is extremely clear. He says unequivocally, I stepped out in front of him and ordered him out of the car in the middle of the street. And if we're looking at the whole record, as we have to on summary judgment, that is a material factual dispute.
Before you sit down, let's talk about fabrication of evidence for a minute. So the argument is, Ruff said at the preliminary hearing, it was the bumper, it was definitely the bumper, not the cover. And then 4 or 5 years later at his deposition, he said, I don't know, but you know, I'm not a mechanic. So that might be impeachable, it might be inconsistent, but it's not contrary. Like, how is that evidence of fabricated evidence?
Well, Your Honor, as the magistrate court, I think, recognized, the issue is that Officer Ruff later said, I didn't even see it. I never saw the car driving. And we have other witnesses. This isn't just, I remembered it differently later on. It's that the other officer, Officer Hill, said, no, that couldn't possibly have been true. Officer Ruff wasn't even there. And I think that's where the distinction is. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Norfleet.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Andrew Norfleet. For you today on behalf of the defendants in this matter. For all intent and purposes, the remaining defendants are Defendant Ruff and Defendant Hill. Your Honor, if I may, I would like to address some of the questions that were asked. I think what we heard from plaintiff's counsel primarily was arguments that go to the ultimate disposition of the case. Well, could it be the bumper under a statute? And if it was dragging or if it wasn't, those go to the ultimate question of how the case would be decided. That does not go to probable cause. If the court is only looking at the issue of probable cause, as the district court did and should have, then what happens ultimately to that charge doesn't matter. The ultimate disposition of the case is not relevant to the question of probable cause. What is relevant is back in August of 2015, at 2 o'clock in the morning, what objective facts did the officers have at that time?
And within those objective facts, there had to be something that constituted probable cause.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And speaking to that, Your Honor, This question of Officer Hill, did Officer Hill change his testimony? And well, first of all, I would answer that by saying this incident happened in 2015. Officer Hill was deposed almost 5 years later. Could his recollection have been different? It could have been. But respectfully, I would ask, why does that matter in this case? One person had the most clear story of what happened that night, and it's never changed. And that's Mr. Brackbill. From the very beginning, Mr. Brackbill says a number of things. I drove from Hershey to Harrisburg. It was raining. I had my windows up. I didn't hear anything. I get to Harrisburg. I'm at an intersection. It stops raining. I put my windows down. I start driving. I hear the scraping coming from the front of my car. I pull over to find out what was going on with my car. I pulled over immediately in the middle of the street. And it was then that officers on foot, and he actually says, it must have been the sound of my car that drew the officer's attention to me. That's when they came to me.
So let's assume for the moment that we agree that there is a material dispute of fact as to whether Mr. Brackbill pulled over on his own or whether he was directed by an officer to do so. Have you forfeited any argument that Officer Ruff is entitled to qualified immunity?
The district court, Your Honor, found that that Officer Ruff was not open to qualified immunity. So could we raise that? We did not raise that on cross appeal.
Okay.
But if I may address that, the first part of your question, Your Honor, as to whether or not there's a dispute of material fact, that there is not. And Your Honor, it may have been you who asked the question, and I believe it was, to plaintiff's counsel about plaintiff's counsel representing in their statement of undisputed material facts what happened in this case. Not only did they represent it, they admitted to the defendant's statement of material facts. Paragraph 11 in the defendant's statement of material facts in support of the motion for summary judgment was that Mr. Brackbill stopped his car in the middle of the street.
But would you agree, I imagine, that setting aside the statement of material facts and the counterstatement, the record itself, the deposition transcripts, show that there would be a dispute as to what caused Mr. Brackbill to stop? Right. I mean, the officers say, I told him to stop. Mr. Brackbill said, I stopped on my own. So if it hasn't been waived or forfeited by Mr. Brackbill, then the record would show a dispute. Do you agree with that?
I wouldn't, Your Honor, respectfully. I think for there to be a dispute of material fact, it has to be something more than a could have been, a change in testimony. Again, Your Honor, to accept that argument, we would have to suggest that from the beginning of this case, Mr. Brackbill has been wrong. He's either been wrong or he hasn't been telling the truth.
It's true that we'd have to, as it were, disbelieve the non-movement's own testimony. But if we look at the entire record in the light most favorable to him, then why wouldn't there be a genuine dispute? You have one party saying I stopped on my own, the other one saying he stopped because I gestured and I told him he had to stop.
Because, Your Honor, when you're looking at a voluminous record, the court has to decide what a dispute of material fact is. And this is not a dispute of material fact. It's a statement made during a deposition 5 years after the incident took place. And it's an argument that we raised in our motion for summary judgment, we raised this issue of the other statute, the statute with stopping the vehicle in the middle of the street. It was not until the district court found that, that the plaintiffs for the first time have said, well, no, it's up to the district court to scour the record and find a dispute of material fact. And because the court did not go through all of the depositions, did not go through all of the documents, and find the statement that Officer Hill made that I stopped the car, that somehow the plaintiffs are shifting the burden. They didn't raise that issue. They didn't explain that issue. They've said it was the district court who failed to find it. And that's simply not the burden of the district court. And my colleagues at work were telling me some great quote I should give you about pigs and truffles. And for the life of me, I don't know what it is.
I think we're familiar with it, yes, the pig and truffle quote. But I think, didn't Officer Hill state, or doesn't the arrest report also state that Officer Hill stopped the car? It wasn't just the deposition, that was years after the fact.
Yeah, again, Your Honor, the report Officer Hill may have said in the report that he stopped the vehicle, but when the plaintiffs admit,
I see what you're getting at. You're saying, why would you go to a jury and say, plaintiff's counsel say, don't believe my client? But that's, I mean, that really goes to the strength of the evidence, not whether a material dispute exists.
I would back that up one level, if I may, Your Honor. I know I'm not to pose questions, so I'm not, but the question that I would pose is then, what is the purpose of, during litigation and during appellate practice, that we're putting forth statements of material fact? And the plaintiffs reviewed, that they have said it's the district court who missed it. Well, they missed it. And we put forth our statement of material facts. And again, not only, you're correct, Your Honor, that the plaintiff put forth a statement of material facts that controverts what they're arguing today, but more importantly, the defendants did. And when you put forth a statement of material facts that the plaintiffs admit to, we are now coming, now, if we accept that argument, we're now going to come before the district court on future cases and say, no, at a later date, even though we put forth a statement of material facts,
so your position was admitted, that they waived this, that it's, you know, regardless of what's in the record, the statement of material facts controls, that issue is finished.
Correct. And not only waived, Your Honor, but I think if Your Honors were to accept that argument, you're sending a, I'm not going to get up on my soapbox and say message, that's too strong. But I think there should be some concern if you say, you admit to a statement in material fact, you represent that to the court, the court makes a decision based on those statements of material fact, and later we're going to allow one of the parties to say, I get a mulligan on that. I want to change that. An admission is a pretty serious step to take.
So the statute says you can't stop like this outside of a business or residence district. And the red brief says, your brief says, that it was near a business and residential district. And I think I saw something about a church nearby and a restaurant nearby. What is the record evidence that this didn't occur outside, that it occurred outside of a business or residential district?
I would answer that with two things, Your Honor. First, the testimony of the officers who testified that they were on foot in that area because it's a business district in Harrisburg. Not only is it a business, it's the bar district. I was trying to figure out a nicer way to say it, but it's the bars. So they were on foot patrol in that area because it's in a business district. I believe plaintiff's testimony also indicated that there were apartments, not only his apartment nearby, but there were apartments near where he stopped at the intersection on Chestnut Street. And again, if I may, Your Honor, and I'm not going to keep going to the well on this, but that's an argument to make at a later date to say, okay, the statute didn't apply because the officers didn't prove it was close enough to a bar, or it was not close enough to an apartment building. That's not probable cause. That's a standard higher than probable cause. The officers only need to show objective, reasonable facts that that they had at that time that it was near a bar district or a residential area.
So the plaintiff's counsel argued that as to the bumper violation, the Court of Common Pleas dismissed that bumper violation. Can we rely on that?
I don't believe you can.
Are we bound by that?
You're not.
They dismissed it? Why not?
Again, looking at the statute, or I'm sorry, for the standard for probable cause, the outcome of that hearing is not determinative as to whether or not the officers had probable cause in August of 2015. Many cases go to preliminary hearings, many cases go to trial, charges are dismissed. That doesn't mean that the officers were without probable cause at the time. The other thing I wanted to mention, Your Honor, about that hearing, I'm sure counsel will say it's not relevant. If you look at the transcript, Your Honor, the district attorney's office was not prepared to move forward with the hearing. They messed up the time. Mr. Brackbill's attorney at the time, who are not either of learned counsel here today, said, hey, my client took half a day off. You know, why does he have to come back, or why does he have to be delayed? And Judge Tully said, yeah, that's fair, and it's a de minimis. If it is a violation, it's a de minimis violation. I'm not bringing everybody back for that.
It's a traditional, called in some courts, statutory appeals hearing, correct?
Correct.
Okay. What about their argument that you didn't raise bumper violation on appeal and therefore we shouldn't consider it?
Your Honor, I'll borrow from plaintiff's argument and say it was before the court. It was before the district court. The district court considered it. There is certainly enough probable cause and enough facts to suggest that there was a violation of the bumper statute. Ultimately, the district court decided the case on a different issue, Your Honor. The district court did not reach that decision. Does that preclude your honors from reviewing that? It does not. The district court simply reached its decision and granted summary judgment appropriately based on a different issue.
And I think you said in your argument that the district court rejected the qualified immunity argument. Wasn't it the magistrate judge that rejected the qualified immunity argument?
It was, Your Honor, and I'm happy to clarify. The district court accepted the magistrate judge's, that portion of the report and recommendation. The district court adopted that portion. There was not a separate finding by the district court. It was simply adopted by the district court. Your Honors, I see my red light is.
Mr. Krekemer, we'll hear on rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. And Your Honors, I would ask that the court affirm the district court's decision.
Just briefly to address the issue of waiver, or the idea that the plaintiff is stuck with the way that they have presented the material facts. And I think if we're looking at it in a broad rule, as defense counsel is suggesting, that's not what we're asking for. What we're asking for is in this kind of circumstance, where we have this post hoc justification, where we're saying, can we look in the record somewhere to justify some violation? In that circumstance, I think it is reasonable and appropriate to look at the whole record. If we're reaching out and saying, well, maybe this statute applies, or maybe this statute applies, then there's something very different about going through that analysis than where we're looking at the whole record. And we have to, I think, in this kind of circumstance, look at what Officer Hill said. Look at what he said in his initial report. Look at what he said in his testimony.
So, I mean, attorneys have agency to present certain arguments to the district court and to choose not to present others. And if they make an affirmative choice to focus on certain evidence at, you know, at the expense of others, then why should we allow them to change course at the appeal stage? And couldn't that result in multiple remands in future cases where attorneys' initial strategy didn't work out?
Well, I don't think so, Your Honor, because, again, I think we're asking for a very narrow kind of a circumstance where if we look at sort of the evolution of the case, I mean, the magistrate court didn't even address this. The magistrate judge didn't address this issue at all. And all we had was a paragraph in defense counsel's summary judgment brief that was then sort of resurrected by the district court. And if we're going through that process, we're just sort of searching for the record for some justification, I don't think it's unreasonable to say, well, there's very clearly a dispute. Mr. Brackbill recalled stopping. He never testified affirmatively, well, I didn't stop because of Officer Hill. He just said, I stopped. And now Officer Hill is saying very clearly, unequivocally in his testimony, I ordered him out, I put my hand up, I ordered him out of the car in the middle of the street.
But isn't it the attorney's job to tell the district court where the dispute exists such that summary judgment would be inappropriate?
Well, it certainly is. But again, in this case, the district court, the first time this came out where anyone made an argument that stopping at Officer Hill's or under his own volition was a violation of the statute, that came out from the district court. Because what defense counsel argued in the motion for summary judgment was, well, Mr. Brackbill hasn't affirmatively proved that he couldn't have pulled over to the side. And so, I mean, what we really have is sort of this moving target where we're trying to put this onto the facts when the facts aren't clear. And ultimately, all we're asking for is this court to remand for a fact finding, for a jury determination of this very disputed record. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you for your briefs and arguments. Take the matter under advisement.